Hey, Matt, have you saddened that we're not able to gather together this weekend? We were going to make some changes to what was going to be our regular service, regardless, because we knew with the weather it would prohibit many from being able to participate. And Psalm 2 was going to be what I was going to spend some time discussing as we would gather together. So I wanted to share just a few thoughts with you from the Psalm. It's been on my mind lately. I read it on January 2nd, spent some time studying it again then. And then it came into my mind last week when we were talking about the Jewish leaders surrounding Jesus and demanding that he answer, this idea of them just pushing back against him and his authority. And the reality is, in the world, there's a lot of chaos. You turn on the news, chaos here, chaos there. Seems as if oftentimes things are out of control. And we don't have to turn on the news. You just look at your daily planner, or you look back on your day and you see these evidences of chaos, things that seem out of control. But Psalm 2 gives us a foundation, gives us a solid rock that we can stand on and be reminded that God is in control. Let me read to you. Why do the nations rage and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord. They do this against Yahweh and against his anointed, saying, "Let us burst their bonds asunder and cast away their cords from us." Really, the idea here is, how stupid is it that the rulers and the nations would rise up and plot against the Lord? This was happening in David's day, and this continues to happen in our day. It happened before David, and it will continue to happen beyond us. Again, we see this evidenced in the way the Jews are treating Jesus, God in the flesh, in resisting and pushing back against his authority. Now, in the context, it speaks against his anointed. This is that term that we understand to mean the Christ, the Messiah. In the context, originally, it's talking about David. David is the king. And the nations are pushing back against David, and they're plotting together against David and Yahweh, and saying, let's break his bonds. They don't want to be controlled by David. They don't want to be controlled by David's God. This kind of makes me think of even Herod, when he was so jealous that there could be another king. In Matthew chapter 2, that he pushes back and he destroys and murders all of those children, all of those boys in Bethlehem. But even in doing so, he doesn't thwart the Lord's plans. Let me read on. He who sits in the heavens, so as he observes these things, he who sits in the heavens laughs, and the Lord holds them in derision. And then he will speak to them in his wrath and terrify them in his fury, saying, "As for me, I have set my king on Zion, my holy hill." So the Lord responds by laughing. It's not a laugh that's hysterical. I don't think that's the idea. I think it is a laugh in disgust. He mocks them. How could you even think? Because they're rebelling against the holy and the true God. And he reminds them, "I have set my king. My king has been established on Zion, on this holy hill. Kings and rulers, if you desire to remove David from his throne, then you are desiring to remove me from mine," is the idea that's being communicated. And there's no way that's going to happen. Remember, we talked even last week. There's so many cool connections for me. Nobody can pluck us out of Jesus' hand. Then he says, "My Father who has given these sheep to me is greater than all, and no one can pluck them out of his hand." There's no pushing back. There's no breaking these bonds apart. Notice verses 7 through 9. "I will tell of the decree of the Lord. You said to me, 'You are my son. Today I have begotten you.' Ask of me, and I will make the nations your heritage, and the ends of the earth your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron and dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel." So David responds. This is David's words. "The Lord said to me, 'You are my son. Today I have begotten you.'" And there's a lot that we could really begin to unpack here. But what we truly understand, this figurative language, David is recognized to be the adopted son of God. He is the representative of Yahweh there for Israel and for the nations as this appointed king. And so it's a particular position. And what we're going to see, and in particular when we get back into John, is that Jesus is the begotten of the Father, but not in the same sense of David, right? David is a human. Jesus is human and God. Jesus is part of the Godhead. And Jesus has been eternally begotten by the Father. He's not created as David is created, but as part of that structure. And so there's just these beautiful parallels that we see in this particular passage. And I don't have time to go into that. You could read Hebrews chapter 1 if you wanted to think about that just a little bit more within this context. But I love this particular promise that is made to David. You can push back all you want, but you will be broken, it says, with a rod of iron, because I have been appointed as the anointed one for Yahweh. And so just a powerful promise that David is rehashing and reciting. And then we end with this: now therefore, O kings, be wise. It's an invitation. The psalmist David is inviting the kings, the people of the world, be wise, be warned, O rulers. So he knows who he's speaking to, the kings and the rulers. He says, you need to be wise, you need to be warned. That's the crux of what he's inviting them into. And it's a bit of a response call. Like, how are you going to respond to this? You get to write the rest of this story based upon how you are going to respond in this particular situation. So be wise. And what does he call them to? Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Put away your false gods and rejoice in the one true God. Begin to worship the one true God. Follow him. And then he says this: kiss the Son. Kiss the Son. In those ancient times, when kings would be conquered, they would submit themselves by posturing themselves and kissing, giving homage by kissing that conqueror, sometimes on the feet, sometimes on the hand or a ring, just as a recognition of their submission. And so here, the nations, these kings are being invited to kiss the Son, to humble themselves. And this is a gracious and merciful act on behalf of Yahweh, inviting them to respond differently than they have been responding. And it ends with this promise. Here it is: blessed are all who take refuge in him. All right, so what do we do with this psalm? I'll give you just a couple of implications to think about. One, the Lord is sovereign. We see that in this psalm. That's why I say, in this world of chaos, in our lives of chaos, it is important that we recognize that although there may be many who push back and rebel, and we see the chaos that comes as a result of that, in these particular situations, God is still sovereign and still in control. So nations will rise and fall. God's in control. Our car breaks down. God's in control. Others rise up against us. God is in control all the way through. The second thing I want to say is the Lord has established his kingdom. Interesting point about this psalm. The whole Psalter was organized and edited and put together either during the Babylonian captivity or after the Babylonian captivity. I would lean more to think that it was put together after the Babylonian captivity. Once, you know, Nehemiah, Ezra came back, the things are being reestablished. And they put Psalm 2 at the front with Psalm 1 because they are the entryway really into the Psalter, the blessed man who is recognition of the Christ, the one who is the blessed man, and then Psalm 2 of his true reign. But what's interesting about then thinking about the timeline, there was no king in Israel, right? David had been dead for a long time. The kingly structure had ended in the Babylonian captivity. So why would they highlight this at the beginning of this altar? Because they knew there was a king to come. They knew that there was an anointed one. They knew that there was one greater than David in the lineage of David who would come. The psalm can be a bit of a mess to interpret as you think through, because we're talking about David, but we're also talking about something far more significant: the coming of Jesus, the true anointed one, the true Messiah who would come. Peter makes this abundantly clear, and I don't have time to mention it here, or at least unpack it, but in Acts chapter 4, Peter takes this psalm and applies it to Jesus, recognizing him to be the long-awaited Messiah. The point is, Jesus is the final and ultimate fulfillment of the psalm. He is the anointed one. He is the chosen king. He was the one who will crush the rulers like clay pots. He is the one to whom all people must surrender themselves, kiss the Son. That's what Hebrews 1 is trying to tell us. It's also what Philippians 2 is telling us, that every knee will bow to him, every tongue will confess, because he has been given a name that is above every name. And still yet, despite that, sinners, the nations will continue to rebel. People will continue to push back against his sovereign work, his lordship. They'll push back against his grace. They'll push back against his mercy, rebelling in a whole host of ways. And we don't want to be among those people who say, we don't want you as our king. We want to recognize that we want Jesus as the king. We want to surrender ourselves, as we're called to in this text, serve the Lord and rejoice in those things. As we watch and are directly affected by these things that are going on around us, we are reminded that it is in him that we take our refuge. Psalm 2 was written over 3,000 years ago, and despite the rise and fall of many kingdoms and kings, his plan of redemption has not been thwarted. Jesus will return. He will vindicate his people. He will make all things new. This is our refuge. This is our hope. No one can pluck us out of his hand. There is nothing that can separate us from his love. So today, who's your king? Are you today finding your refuge in Jesus? If not, surrender yourself to him. Kiss the Son. Don't be like those arrogant Jewish religious leaders who were pushing back against his authority, were pushing back against what they were plainly seeing. He is doing the works that only the divine could do. He is fulfilling all of the prophecies that were spoken by the fathers in the Old Testament. And so serve him. Psalm 2, beautiful comfort, and I hope it's a blessing to you and to your family. Have a great day. Be safe. If you need anything, please reach out to one of your elders or one of your deacons. Okay. Blessings.